Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
He's the man who's teaching small business how to embrace social media, the king of tweets.
Well, they have the internet on computers now. To start, press any key. Where's the any key?
Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back, 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for staying with me. My pleasure to continue to be with you, and I'm very excited about having our good buddy Stephen Baum back on the show. Stephen is a longtime friend of mine and yours. He's an outstanding member of our Brain Trust. He's a former partner at Booz Allen Hamilton. Now he applies his trade in the marketplace just like you and me, and as a small business owner, basically. He is one of the great leaders of a Vistage group, or actually several Vistage groups, I guess, in the New York City area. He is the author of the outstanding book, What Made Jack Welch Jack Welch, and he's our good friend. Stephen Baum, welcome back to the show.
Good morning, Jim. Great to be with you.
How many times do people say, this is Stephen Baum, he's Sam Baum's father? How many times does that happen?
Yeah, I do get that. More than a couple of dozen times.
And more probably as time goes by, right?
Well, you're good to remember that Sam's show is on Fox on Monday nights at 9 o'clock.
And it's called Lie to Me. It's one of my favorite shows. What are you talking about? I watch it all the time. But, folks, that's got to be a wonderful feeling to know that this little knucklehead that you spawned is turned into somebody who can create something that important. What a great payday for a father.
You know, I once let him know that I would like to hear from him a little more often, and he said to me, why don't you just be proud you created a seaworthy craft?
And you said, well, that's okay, but, you know, son, I'd still like to hear from you.
I would like to see you in harbor from time to time.
That's right. Come ashore once in a while.
Exactly right.
That's funny. But anyway, congratulations on that. That's a success story, folks, and we're proud of him. Stephen, talk to us. The last couple of times you've been here, you've given us reports on what your folks do. You're as a leader of executive groups in the Vistage structure, where you bring in CEOs from disparate industries to come together around a table and talk about their ideas on a regular basis, and talk about what they're excited about and what they're frightened about. And the last couple of times you've been doing that, you've been telling us about some of the general comments that you've been getting. What are you hearing these days?
Well, it's really interesting, Jim. Everybody who is thriving now, surviving now, has been through the period of battening down the hatches and trying to figure out every which way to survive.
I call it, I say we've been through the desert on a horse with no name for the last 2 years.
Absolutely. What's been going on the last several months, a little longer than that, is a very opportunistic attitude that during this period, now that I'm leaner and meaner and I'm fiscally fit, I'm looking for opportunities to grow my business without hanging over the deep edge.
I want to get on the leading edge, but not without getting on the bleeding edge.
Something like that. And so a couple examples recently, which I'll be happy to talk about. One of the business owners, and most of these guys are business owners, although there's some professional managers, has actually been looking at acquisitions of competitors.
Hmm.
And the competitors are available for acquisition because they didn't do the things they needed
right.
to do
right.
to get in shape. So they are approaching a distressed condition, which means opportunity. And he's looked at several of these. One, he said, no, the price is not right, and there's too much that's got to get fixed. But two of them he actually has now bought.
Hmm.
And they are a bit smaller than he is, but they offer some opportunities for the fiscally fit because he knows his business so well, as a good small business owner does, that he's put together a team of two or three of his own people to go do the due diligence. And they really do a thorough job. And in the course of that, they figure out the answer to the key questions, which is, what price can I pay for this and how much money can I make with it? if we're smart about what we do once we own it,
mm-hmm.
in terms of what we don't need.
And, of course, that's presuming that the alignment is already understood and accepted.
Well, there's a conversation with the owner about whether the owner's going to stay and manage or whether the owner's going to leave and all that sort of stuff and how much of the management team wants to take this to a new height because
right.
they're in a hurt condition. And what he's looking for are things like new customer list, diversifying his footprint towards national coverage, high margin leverage for the capacity he's already got. So
mm-hmm.
he doesn't have to add much fixed cost. And there's relatively low marginal cost on the extra business.
Right. He's probably also looking for what do they know that we don't know that will help us, and what do we know that they don't know that we can leverage over into their model.
Well, of course, as you begin to...
I tell you what, Steve, hold on to that thought. We're going to take a quick break, folks. This is a fascinating story about business acquisition. Folks, you know we've been talking about this. Think about this, growing through acquisition, not organically, at a time when it's hard to grow organically. Twenty Tales, stay with us.
Don't let your troubles make you cry. Don't waste a moment wondering why.
The small business anthem, ladies and gentlemen. The Atlanta Rhythm. Say, leave it up a little, Kevin. Let's hear this a little bit. You have to go on and do it or die. That's right. That's the Small Business Anthem, Atlanta Rhythm Section, ARS. They didn't know it, but they were producing the Small Business Anthem. And you know, you got to go on. You're going to do it or die. That's the way you think. But you got to do it smart. You got to do it the right way. Otherwise, you're just practicing bad habits. And as golf pros will tell you, when you practice a bad swing, you're just making it worse. You got to learn how to swing the right way, and you got to learn how to run your business the right way. And one of those guys who knows how to do that and knows how to teach us how to do that is our good friend Stephen Baum, the author of What Made Jack Welch. Jack Welch, an outstanding Vistage leader out of in the New York area. Stephen, tell us how we can find your book, how we can find you, and the story you're telling us about this, about how to grow through acquisition rather than organically. You've actually put that on the website, and people can go read a little bit about it. So go ahead and tell us about it.
That's right. The website is StephenHBaumLeadership.com.
B-A-U-M. That's Stephen with a P-H.
Stephen with a P-H, middle initial H, BaumLeadership.com. And some background on the stories Jim and I are talking about today is already up and on the website.
And the book's available wherever books are sold.
The book's available mainly online at this point.
Yeah.
And the subtitle is How Ordinary People Become Extraordinary Leaders, and that's really the gist of the book. It's biographies
right.
of 35 CEOs.
Right. So check that out, folks. And so now let's get back to this company, this member of one of your Vistage groups
right.
that we're just using as an example, folks, no names, and
exactly.
and how this company decided to grow through acquisition. And you know, Stephen, I've been telling my audience 2 years ago, as we started into this mess, I said, folks, start paying attention. And I know you don't want to take any big growth steps right now, but there may be some growth steps you can't afford to pass up, and that is if one of your competitors starts, you know, you see some weakness there, you might want to plug in and find out what you can do. Go ahead.
Well, picking up on your last point, in the course of the due diligence, what you learn is not only about the other company and what they do well and what they don't do well, but it reflects on your own company, and you figure out some things to do in your company that will make it a better company as well. So the idea of going through these conversations, which begin with some informal discussions with the competition, but really don't take off until there's enough meeting of the minds for a non-disclosure agreement. Then you go in and do the due diligence, and that's when you really find what's going on in the place. And what's been very impressive about the particular company that I'm talking about here as a case example is they know their business so well. They have their dashboard so clear of what they monitor and what they measure. They know their stats, that when they put together this two- or three-person team to go look at the other company, they've got the radar. They've got the forms to fill out on what the real numbers are. And often, they come out after a week of talking to this company, knowing the company better than the company does it know itself.
So they take with them a template.
They take with them a template, and it's a synergy template, in which they're trying to estimate a worst case and a best case and a middle case of being able to take the two companies, put them together. There are obviously some cost savings that happen, but there's also an upside in this with expansion of services to some of the existing customer base. And there's some calculations about what happens if we lose 5 or 10% of their customer base in the process. And then there's a bunch of wonderful things to do to make sure that if the deal does go through, you keep everything you want to keep and get rid of everything you don't.
And, of course, a couple of things that you're hoping for is you're hoping to find that they really are very inefficient with their payroll and, you know, like they're paying people that they shouldn't be paying, et cetera, et cetera. Those are easy things to find when you recast a financial statement. And you're hoping for that kind of a thing that makes it, you know, easy to fix. And you're also hoping that maybe you know something that they don't know. Maybe you're doing it or you think it needs to be done, and that they don't get it. And that's the reason they're going down, not because they've got a bad reputation or they've got some kind of bad systems or whatever. It's something that you can fix pretty easy. Those are the things you're hoping for, aren't they?
That's great instincts, because in both of the cases, in this one, they were companies with a terrific reputation with their customers. But inside, there were a bunch of hard choices that they never were able to bring themselves to make. And it's a lot easier for the acquirer to make some things happen that are long overdue.
The recasting a financial statement has to be done with fish eyes, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And the way the debt is structured and the interest rates that have been allowed to bubble up, all of that is up for grabs. And if you're running a company where you do have an efficient workforce and maybe you have outsourced some of it and they are still living 20 years ago and they're doing everything themselves, there's a lot of opportunities on the downside and the upside.
Can I stick something in here? If you used the term the reference of the century. I've quit talking about the 20th century. Because that's more than 10 years ago. If you're still in the 20th century, I can't help you. And I've been, but for the last 10, 12 years, I've been trying to get people into the 21st century. Mm-hmm. Now I'm talking to them about forget the 21st century. Let's talk about the second decade of the 21st century. Let's make it that, let's partition it that way. And so my point is, if you can't take yourself into the second decade of the 21st century, you're not going to be able to do any better with another company that's not there either.
That's right.
I want you to talk about that when we come back, Stephen. Right back with Stephen Baum, our good friend Stephen H. Baum, and put StephenHBaumLeadership.com is the website. The book is called What Made Jack Welch? Jack Welch. Stay with us. Welcome back, 7 Till. I'm Jim Blasingame. Thanks very much for hanging out with us. I'm Jim Blasingame. I said that, didn't I? I like to say my name. We all do. We all like to hear our names, don't we? Especially on our birthdays. No, it's not my birthday. It's Stephen Baum's birthday. Stephen is having a great birthday today, and he's our good friend, and I can't think of anything I'd rather do than celebrate Stephen Baum's birthday. Stephen, happy birthday.
Thank you so much, Jim. And I am having a good time. I'm with my friends right now, and I'll be going back to my granddaughter in a little while.
Boy, I tell you, it just doesn't get any better than that. Jim Blasingame and a granddaughter. I mean, how
exactly
could you beat
right.
that, right?
Now, anyway, Jim, you said something about the second decade of this century, and that's sort of a segue into another topic, I think, that doesn't get much conversation when the bullets are flying at you and you're in tough times. And it has to do with that vision thing. And not enough companies take the time to say, okay, this is the second decade of the 21st century. What are we going to try to become that we ain't now? What are we going to be able to do in 3 or 4 years that we can't do now? Why will we be better? And the reason that that's not just touchy-feely stuff is you ask yourself why people come to work in the first place, besides the money. Why do they love going to work for one company instead of another? And it's because they make a difference in something worthwhile. They're with people they respect and enjoy.
Right.
They're proud to be part of the organization. And they get recognized when you work for a company that where the word gets out that it's a terrific company. They're proud to be part of that. And a compelling vision, some people call it mission, is a big piece of driving this motivation. And the only person who can start that conversation is the boss. He's the one with the passion, the passion and the drive and the spirit to say, here's where we're going, follow me. And too often, all the conversations in every meeting are just about the numbers. They're not about milestones and being able to be way better than the competition in some way or to be a company that matters in the world.
Well, there's no question about it. And that's going to become more and more important as we move forward, isn't it?
Well, that's one of the ways you differentiate yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, aren't customers, large and small, going to start considering the values of the group they're doing business with, not just the value that they deliver, but the values of that organization? Isn't that going to become higher priority on the radar than it is today, than it has been in the past, I should say?
Well, if you think about what's happened during tough times, a lot of companies cut corners. And the next thing that happens is they do things that sow distrust with their
right.
customers. I thought you promised me, you told me you'd deliver,
right.
you told me this, you told me that.
Yep.
And you didn't stand behind it when I called the question. And that's increasingly going to be a differentiator, the companies you trust versus the companies
yep.
you don't.
Yep. Character and ethics. Albert Camus said, integrity has no need of rules. And how you behave is going to be more important in the future than it has been in the past. Let's come back to this acquisition that you were telling us about. What wound up happening? How did they get that done?
Well, they've been through all the pieces of it, and the first one is already pretty well integrated into the mothership. They put together two teams for integration.
Did they need financing? And if they did they get it?
Yes, they did. They
huh,
went to the bank.
That's a good story.
It's a remarkable thing. The banks are just looking for opportunities where they feel real good about the safety of it and the future of it.
Was it an independent bank or was it a larger bank?
It was a big bank.
It what? Wow, that's good.
Yeah,
big
bank forked up quite a few millions of dollars
wow.
in this acquisition.
That's good. Good news.
And the company is a substantial size company, but it's in the $50-60 million range.
Right.
It's not a gigantic company, and for the bank to put together a loan package like this was quite remarkable.
That is in these times. Yeah, absolutely. I've got about 30 seconds. Last thoughts.
Well, the last thoughts are: this is in destructive capitalism. There are moments of opportunity, even in calamity.
Mm-hmm.
This is now the time to be looking for those.
Look around you. This group has proven that deals can be made, acquisitions can be made, and they can get financed.
That's right.
Thanks for being here, Stephen. We appreciate it very much.
Pleasure to be with you, Jim.
Stephen H. Baum, leadership.com is his website. Smallbusinessadvocate.com is mine. I hope you check both of those out when you get a chance. And don't forget to check out Stephen's book, What Made Jack Welch Jack Welch? How Ordinary People Become Extraordinary Leaders. Stephen Baum will be back another day, I promise. We won't do without him for very long. I got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, reminding you that a ship in the harbor is safe. But that's not what ships were made for.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.